The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Thank you for joining us. In a moment, I'm going to have a very special in-studio guest who will be here virtually at any time, but I want to make mention of a couple of opportunities for you to get involved. Now, we have literally, in the last year plus here in California, we've watched virtually everything shut down, our churches especially, and we here at KKLA, we are very community-oriented, and for the most part, we've had to shut those events down as well. But here's the good news. As things are slowly opening up, we are getting back to serving you with joy and the love of the Lord. And if you're a pastor, if you have not heard by now, there's a special morning event, Friday morning, June the 25th. Now, it will be happening at Shepherd Church in Porter Ranch, Pastor Dudley's church. We hear Pastor Dudley weeknights at 7 with Lift Up Jesus. And it's an event by which Pastor Jack Graham will share with you, if you're in ministry or you are a pastor or a church leader, Pastor Jack's going to share some thoughts on how we can get people to get back in church and other challenges that we faced over the last year. So Pastor Jack Graham from Prestonwood, we hear Pastor Jack weekday afternoons at 1, PowerPoint. He has a small little church in the Plano area. He's got about 45,000 that he runs every weekend. And Pastor Jack Graham has been there more than 30 years. And he will be here Friday morning to speak to pastors at Shepherd Church. Also, Saturday morning, my ministry will be hosting an event at Godspeak Church in the Newbury Park Thousand Oaks area. Pastor Rob McCoy, we heard the previous hour sitting down with Dennis Prager. My ministry is KMG Ministries. We are concerned about the souls of men all across the country. And so we have an event Saturday morning at Godspeak. Rob McCoy will be speaking. Pastor Jack Graham will be speaking. My best friend Mark Little, who you've heard fill in on this program. Daryl Strawberry, my best buddy, will be there as well. And Pastor Mike and I will be sharing with you Saturday morning, the 26th. So the two events, the pastor event, go to kkla.com, type in the keyword pastor. That event is Friday morning, June the 25th. And then the KMG event, the men's ministry event, is the next morning, Saturday morning, June the 26th. Easy to find out. Just go to franksontag.com for more information about that. All right, I have a man in studio who I kind of recognize. Scoot on up to the microphone. I knew of Lorenzo years ago. He has been in and out of Southern California basketball for years. He was part of the national championship team in 95 with Coach Jim Herrick. Went up to Washington, led some young men to various championships. Now he's back here in SoCal at Pepperdine. So without further ado, he made the trek, fought traffic. Lorenzo Romar, it's good to see you, brother.
How you doing?
What's going on?
Oh, nothing much, man. Great to be here.
It's good to see you. How is traffic?
A little problematic.
Yeah, people are out and about again, huh?
People are. It's amazing to see how it has slowly crept back to where the roads are full again.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful that you agreed to come in. And
thanks for having me.
Sure. We're going to sit down for an hour and kind of roll up our sleeves, maybe talk some hoops, talk about the Lord.
Yeah, all right.
Talk about your life and how it is you're here. Were you raised in Southern California?
I was. I was born in a hospital in Southgate, but we were raised in Compton, California. So until I moved away and went to college, that's where we lived.
Where did you go to college?
I went to Cerritos College, junior college, then went away to the University of Washington.
And rumor has it you played a little round ball in your time.
I did. Watched a lot of it before that, though. You know, grew up here when I was growing up, UCLA was in their heyday with John Wooden, and the Lakers had Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and even Wilt Chamberlain at one point. And basketball was just a whole lot of fun for me.
How was it in your home growing up? Did you know the Lord at a young age? Was God acknowledged in your home? Were you dragged to church? What about your walk early on as a man that, or a young man, or a boy who maybe kind of believed in God, but maybe your walk wasn't where it is now?
Was not a Christian growing up. Was a church goer every now and then. My parents would go to church, and you know, I would go. It seemed like on Sundays my ritual was more to watch Jack Twyman and Chris Schenkel on ABC and watch the, what seemed like Bill Russell against Wilt Chamberlain every week. And we'd watch that, and then we'd go play basketball down on the playground. But on Christmas and Easter, I remember for sure I would go to church.
Do you have any memories of I mean, I can share mine, and I think there's a lot of us that can relate to. We didn't want to be there. We kind of got dragged, and yet we persevered or looked for our friends. What was your church experience like on those 2 days of the year?
It wasn't bad. I enjoyed going. And, you know, we would go every now and then aside from that. And I was even an altar boy one time. So I enjoyed it. When I went, I enjoyed it. I remember thinking, even at a young age, I should come more. We only lived about 8 houses away from where the church was.
When did you discover basketball? I mean, is it something from your earliest memories you knew you loved and you played, or was it something that maybe in early high school it kind of found you and you're like, man, I can do this?
Frank, it was, you know, we played all sports when we were younger. I really liked baseball. But basketball was the thing. At about 9 or 10 years old, I started to play on the playground in Compton, and I just became obsessed. I mean, obsessed. Every basketball card I had ever, I knew every NBA player, read about every game, watched every game. We had all of the magazines. We were just constantly were immersed in the game of basketball. If you couldn't watch one on television, we'd listen to it on the radio. So it was just a fun time. The game meant so much and still does, but back then growing up, it was just something I couldn't get enough of.
The head coach at Pepperdine University, Lorenzo Romar, is my guest for the hour. So from high school to jump into Cerritos, obviously on some level you had aspirations to play after high school. How did you do in high school, first of all?
Oh, I was just okay. You know, as a freshman, I decided I wanted to go to a school called Verbum Dei.
Oh, my goodness. Yep.
Growing up, I mean, their teams were, you know, Verbum Dei, I think, was founded in 1968. And my first year in high school was 1972. And they were winning championships. And again, there's that obsession with basketball. I wanted to go somewhere where you could have a chance to play with some really good players. And that was the good news. The bad news was I was about 5'2" as a freshman and just could not make the team. As a sophomore, I was 5'6½" and went out for varsity. And Frank didn't make it, was cut after a day. And went out for the junior varsity the next day and was cut after one practice then. So it was tough. I mean, there were guys at lunchtime that didn't play for any team at Verbum Dei that were just as good as any of the players that were playing on the varsity. I mean, guys that went on to play in the NBA. These guys at
David
lunchtime.
Greenwood.
Roy Hamilton. You know, those guys could – they had some players out there that were phenomenal. I could not believe – my first day of school, watching everybody was out there playing. I mean, it's 7:30 in the morning. School hadn't started yet, and these guys are out there playing. You know, and it was just a real wake up call for me as to how much talent there was out there in the sport of basketball.
So, in your days where you're about to leave high school, you're a teenager, 15, 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there. Any references, any thoughts about God at that time in your life?
There always was, because like I said, you know, my parents, you know, they made it available for us. They weren't, I wouldn't say they were devout, you know, but they had a healthy respect for God. So God was mentioned every now and then, but it wasn't, you know, as I'm sure we'll get into, it wasn't until much later that I got really serious, much more serious.
Okay. So you leave high school and you go to a JUCO. Go ahead.
Well, I transferred. Our family moved from one side of Compton to the other. And when we moved, it was just too difficult for me to get to Verbum Day, you know, catch the bus, and didn't have transportation, and it wasn't the safest ride out being in South Central.
For sure.
And so we transferred to a school called Pius X, and that's where I spent my 11th and 12th grade years, and finally made the varsity there. I was 5'9" then, and then as a senior, I was 6 foot. 6 foot one, but I was immature at the time and didn't totally finish the season. So I didn't have any offers. So there we go. I'm forced to
go JUCO.
Look for a JUCO because there were no 4-year schools interested. And I remember walking over to Compton College asking the coach for a tryout, and he said he already had his roster. And Frank, this was in May of my senior year. In junior college, you don't have your roster until the following September. You don't know.
Correct.
But it was a nice way of him to just say, get lost, you know. And we tried that at several different colleges. And finally, the coaches at Cerritos gave me an opportunity, and that's where I went on and went to school.
So for the listeners that – I mean, there are guys listening right now, primarily. I'm sure some women. I mean, this is a little bit of sports talk. But – look, competitive athletics, we learn a lot about who we are and about being in relationships. You mentioned Coach Wooden. I kind of knew Coach at a time, and he was a man that you just respected, and he never lost his cool. But come to find out, and I'll share the story with you later on, at his memorial service, I was around a lot of dudes. I had just become a Christian, and they were moaning and groaning because they were just talking about Pastor Dudley. His pastor said, Coach Wooden was a follower of Jesus Christ.
Yes, he was.
And so there you have it. You kind of understand his methods. But before we kind of get into those days and when you started playing a bit more competitively, so just the jump from high school to JUCO is a jump. A lot of people don't know that. And then going from Cerritos to getting up in Washington, your game must have really escalated.
I was a late bloomer, Frank. I really was. And, you know, going from I couldn't make the varsity when I was at Verbum Dei to not being a full-time starter at Pius and not starting my freshman year at Cerritos College, but just had that obsession to get better. You know, I never thought I'm playing this game just so I can get to the NBA. I just thought I'm playing because I love to play. And that would be great if that happened, but I just love to play the game. And I improved to the level as a sophomore at Cerritos, where four-year universities became interested and began to court me and invite me in to come on their campus to visit. And eventually I was able to settle upon a school.
And that would be the University of Washington.
That was the University of Washington.
That became your home away from home, not only as a player but as a coach. Talk about your junior and senior year and anything that you think is noteworthy to the conversation that obviously many listeners may not know. Let's just say when you were done at University of Washington, your playing career did not end. You ended up going to the NBA for a while, of all places.
I just look back on it and just – you talk about God having a plan. Sometimes we think God's plan is just to benefit us and that's it. God's plan is for his glory. And it benefited me a great deal in that I was able to be successful in the game of basketball, but I later learned that God was going to use the game of basketball in my life to bring him glory. And at the University of Washington, my senior year, I averaged 9 points a game. Hardly numbers that would think someone would play in the NBA. And it wasn't like I was at a UCLA at the time, a big-time winning program where we were winning championships and I was averaging 9. I mean, we weren't doing a whole lot of winning. But there was a man named Pete Newell who was a great one of the greatest basketball coaches or coaches of all time in any sports. And he was doing the Pac-10 Game of the Week. He was the color guy on television. And he was also the top scout for the Golden State Warriors. And during that time when I was playing, he got to see many of our games. And he advised Golden State when the draft came along. He said, I don't know if this kid can make it, he says, but if you get a pick in the later rounds, you might want to use a pick on him and just bring him to camp and see what happens. And back then there were 10 rounds, thank goodness, because now there are only two. But back then there were 10. And at Pete Newell's suggestion, Golden State drafted me in the 7th round. I was the 141st player chosen. And, you know, I told you my experience at Verbum Day. I get there and I see all this talent. Well, then when I get to Cerritos, all the different guards that I had played against in high school that were the most valuable players of their league, many of them were at Cerritos trying out. So here we go again. So now in the NBA in training camp, it was these guys I had read about or watched on television. Here they were. We were trying out for the same position, for the same roster spot here, and let alone the other guys there. I think there were 11 guaranteed contracts when I tried out that first year. So it was definitely another wake-up call. But that was one I was expecting because it was the NBA.
Lorenzo Romar is my guest. Did you step on the court during those tryouts thinking, what am I doing here? I got no shot. Or were you like hungry and like, let's give this a roll and see what happens?
I would compare it to being in a foxhole. You're not thinking about a whole lot, but surviving, how to survive, how to get out of this thing. And day to day, that's just how it was. You know, I made sure I was the first one to practice. I made sure I was the last one to leave. Whenever the coach spoke, I was making eye contact. I was trying to do everything right and just really trying to show them that I could make that team. But what really scared me and what made me think along the lines of what you said, what am I doing here, is the first practice, our coach, whose name was Al Attles, right? Great coach, great man. He told the centers, he says, I want you to get over in this corner. You guys go over there. He says, forwards here, the guards, you guys go over there. And he was pointing players out, John, Bill. And I'm standing there, last man standing, and I said, Coach, where would you like me to go? He says, oh, as he's not looking at me, he's looking around like, oh, I forgot about him. He says, number 18, which was my number. Number 18, you go over there. You know, just go somewhere. get out of my face, but just go somewhere. And you could just tell then I was, as Coach Attles later told me, I was drafted as practice fodder.
Sure.
Someone just to be there, sure, to make sure the practices go in case you need an extra body. And that's how it started out.
But that's not how it ended.
No.
So when all was said and done after training camp and it came down to roster cut, is there a story you want to share about, like, you got called in the office, or how did all that go down? Because that had to be quite a memory for you to even now reflect on.
Well, you got to understand, I'm practicing with Bernard King.
Oh, sure.
For those that don't remember or know who Bernard King is, he's one of the greatest offensive players to ever play the game of basketball. I'm in training camp with another great offensive player, World Be Free. You know, these guys, that I had their basketball cards, I watched them, and I'm on the court with these guys. Bernard gets a rebound, and I'm saying, Bernard, outlet, outlet. You know, I'm asking him to throw me the ball, and it's very, very surreal being in there. And I just kept working, practicing, and I started to gain a little more confidence. I felt each day that I belonged. I could play. I could compete with these guys. And it finally came down to the exhibition games. And I remember our first exhibition game was against none other than the Lakers. So they got
just
Kareem.
Just a walk in the park.
Oh, my goodness, you know. And it was quite an experience. And guy Dennis Johnson, the great Celtic,
sure,
and Sonic and Son.
God rest his soul.
That's right. Who was from Compton, who when I was at the University of Washington was playing for the Sonics and kind of treated me like a little brother. And I'd go to his house every now and then. And he was playing then for the Phoenix Suns. And I remember him telling me one of the last exhibition games, he says, hey, don't worry, I talked to coach. I think you're going to make this team. I'm like, come on, man. He's just trying to make me feel good. Well, right before our last game, I think, last practice, coach called us in and said he was going to make a cut after the practice. And I felt like everyone just thought it was going to be me, you know. And he called me in, and he called me into his office, and he said, first thing is you're sitting in the wrong chair. I was so nervous. I sat in his chair, not realizing it was his chair. Yeah. And he just told me to keep working, keep working. But then finally, last day, he said he would call us if we were going to get cut. And right after practice, a couple guys, you could see they snatched them, and they were gone. And, oh, my goodness. And I finally got a call later. Coach asked me how I was doing. I said, I don't know, Coach. You tell me, you know. And he told me that he kind of messed with me a little bit. He enjoyed this. I didn't at the time until he told me the news. He said, you've worked really hard. The veterans, I just want to tell you, really respect your work ethic and how hard you play and your enthusiasm for the game. He says, but I'll never forget. He said, but you just can't divide 13 into 12. We've got one too many. Mm-hmm. And he says, but you're not one of the one too many. He says, you're on the team. We'll see you at practice tomorrow.
Goodness gracious.
I'll never forget that. I remember just calling everyone, telling them that I made the team and I was going to be playing. And for now, it's day to day, but for now,
you're
I'm playing
in the
NBA. And it was phenomenal.
Lorenzo Romar is my guest. We need to break, and we're going to talk a little bit about Lorenzo's time in the NBA and then the season between that and then going into coaching. I know he played with AIA a little bit. We'll talk about faith above all. Much more to talk about. I'm grateful to say the head coach at Pepperdine, Lorenzo Romar, is my guest for the hour, and we'll continue with more of the Frank Sontag Show next. Thank you for joining us here on the Frank Sontag Show. I'm grateful to say my guest for the hour is coach at Pepperdine University, Lorenzo Romar. And if you missed the impact segment, Lorenzo walked us through his childhood and playing ball and transferred schools, went to Verbum Dei, played ball at Cerritos, then went to Washington University, and then got drafted by the Golden State Warriors, round 7, 141st pick.
That's right.
And so played some time in the NBA. And I want to get, obviously, to your faith, and you probably maybe had a moment, but from the mid-'80s to the early 90s, you transitioned from the NBA. I think you played at AIA. We talked about Ralph off the air, Athletes in Action. So somewhere during that time, maybe not in a demonstrative sort of way, but I think your faith maybe came into play somewhere in there.
After my third year in the NBA, I had begun that Christmas Easter church appearance had now come to a point where it was every Sunday. And I just felt, you know, as I'm getting older, what is God really about? And I began searching, you know, and started to finally picked up the Bible and read it for the first time. And I'll paraphrase what I read after my wife had come down and I'd been reading it for 2 hours. She said, what are you doing? I said, did you know this? And it was just amazing to me. And what I really read was that, so I was trying to be closer to God, find God by being a good person. What I read was that God had a certain standard that I could never reach. No matter how good I tried to be, I would always fall short because God was perfect and I wasn't. I was born with something called sin in my life, and which is doing what I want to do and not what God wanted me to do. It was that simple. And that's why Jesus had come to this earth to live and die for my sins and allow God to punish him for all the wrong that I had done. And that he died and rose from the dead 3 days later to show that he had power over death and that he would continue to be alive forever, to continue to be there for me and everyone else. And if I accepted that and ask Christ to come into my heart and change me, I would then become a Christian. That's what happened. And my wife and I, September 10th, 1983.
Praise God.
We both prayed, and it wasn't a sophisticated prayer. It was just basically, Lord, come to us. Make us be what you want us to be. We're going to serve you. And that's what happened. And, you know, it was really interesting because obviously then I couldn't get enough of basketball, I couldn't get enough of the scriptures. I couldn't get enough of Christ, learning about God, learning about what God would want for me. And I actually had been in the league, NBA, for 3 years and got cut after that three times within a year. And when I was in high school, you know, I'm sure you can relate to this. When my mother would get groceries, one thing we wanted to find was the TV guide so we can see what was going to come on television. Sure. And sports and specials, that was one of the categories. Okay, who's going to be on TV? Who's going to play on television? And every now and then I'd see Athletes in Action plays UCLA. Athletes in Action plays Cal State Fullerton. Well, who is Athletes in Action? That sounds like a team maybe that would be fun to play for. And that was it. That was the extent of it. Well, at the University of Washington, my senior year, when the year ended, I sent a couple of films to Athletes in Action because I thought, if I don't play anywhere else,
I'm getting chills.
If I don't play anywhere else, maybe I could play for Athletes in Action. Well, I sent them the wrong film. We played a team twice, Seattle. You had a great game one game and a terrible game the other. I sent them the terrible game, so there was no interest. A good friend of mine who ended up playing in the NBA named Michael Wiley was working out in Tustin. And he says, come out to Tustin. We scrimmage against these guys called Athletes in Action. I said, oh, really? Well, yeah, I want to go. Because I'm thinking, you know, maybe I can get in front of them now and they could see the real deal. So I got in front of them. There was no interest, but I was still not a Christian at that point. They didn't know that. They just weren't interested in my basketball abilities. Well, after 3 years in the NBA, I was cut, and it was actually four. And I was with, it was going into my fifth year. I was trying out with the Indiana Pacers. And I get off the plane to go to summer league training camp, and these two guys are next to me. And they say, you Lorenzo Romar? I said, yeah. They said, we just want to say hello. We're with Athletes in Action. Interesting. After a few weeks of training camp, the Pacers invited me back to the fall camp. They said, look, you'll be on our team, but we can't guarantee anything. And at that point, knowing what Athletes in Action was doing, it was not a guarantee I was going to be playing for the Pacers. I had already been cut three times. I had been married recently, and we had our first child. And what they did was use the game of basketball,
yep,
which was one of my obsessions, to tell the world about Jesus Christ.
Yep.
Use the game of basketball as a hook, kind of a commercial to get you involved in watching that. And now we tell people about how they can have a relationship with Jesus Christ. And it was something that was now my newest obsession and my main obsession. I could put the two together and use that. And I used that platform for 7 years. God used me for 7 years. During that time, taught me how to give my testimony, taught me how to tell others about Jesus Christ in a way that wasn't necessarily non-threatening. You know, sometimes maybe it should be to get their attention, but other times people wanted to hear it. And we'd play in an arena with 15,000 people, and at halftime, we'd tell them how they could become a Christian. And it was great. I learned so much. It gave me a great foundation. And it was as if when I learned what God needed to teach me about how to use sport, specifically my sport, basketball, to bring glory to him, that's when I went on and became a Division I basketball coach at UCLA as an assistant.
Coach Lorenzo Romar is my guest. We have a few minutes. So we have a mutual friend, speaking of UCLA and that crew in the early 90s. Talk about how you got the gig as an assistant coach at UCLA.
I had followed Pepperdine over the years. being from here, being from Compton. And one of my good friends named Mark Wilson ended up playing at Pepperdine, and he played for a man named Jim Herrick. When I was at Verbum Day trying to make the teams that I couldn't, he was coaching at Morningside, and he had great teams that were – it was Verbum Day's rival. And Jim Herrick was the coach. And I'd read – you know, the name Jim Herrick would come up, but now he's at Pepperdine, so I got to know him more. Well, when I was with Athletes in Action, we would play against UCLA. He was then now the coach at UCLA. And I had a friend, Mark Gottfried, that was his assistant, one of his assistants then at the time. And they had an opening. Brad Holland, who played at UCLA and NBA, left and took a head job, as well as Tony Fuller took a head job. So there were openings. And Mark suggested to Coach that, he said, Coach, you got to call Lorenzo. He's from here, and I think you'd have a great opportunity to get him to come. And I met Coach at the Final Four, and I'll never forget. A friend of mine, Dave McDowell, who played, who was with Athletes in Action as an administrator, he drove me to the hotel and he waited for me. And when I came back, he said, well, what happened? Did you take it? I says, well, no, it wasn't offered. Well, what happened? I said, well, Coach said, he asked me if I offered you the job, would you take it? And my response was, well, Coach, I'd have to cross that bridge when I got there. Because with Athletes in Action, we had this inner-city ministry going with these kids. And, man, it was great. We had a league with these kids. We were tutoring these kids. We had Bible study with these kids. And so many people would come and visit them for a weekend, and then they'd never see them again, not unlike a lot of situations in their own home. And they began to trust us. And it was just hard to leave that.
Sure.
And I told that to my buddy, Dave McDowell. I said, I don't know. I don't know if I want to leave. He says, wait a minute. He says, I understand. You are having an impact right here for the Lord with this ministry and with Athletes in Action. He says, you go on to coach at UCLA and eventually become a head coach. Do you realize what kind of impact you can have then? 10 times as much as you could have here. He says, I don't want you to leave, he says, but, man, I think you're turning down a great opportunity. Well, he spoke volumes. I called Coach back and told him I'd be interested, and he hired me. That's how it happened.
Lorenzo Romo is my guest. We need a break. We're going to talk about the year 1995. Something happened over at Westwood, first time since Coach Wooden was there. And I want to talk more present times. Coach is at Pepperdine. I want to talk about men, young men, and the game of basketball, and obviously the greatest man, that would be Jesus Christ. More with Lorenzo Romar next here on the Frank Sontag Show. Welcome back to the Frank Sontag Show. Coach Lorenzo Romar from Pepperdine is my guest in studio, and time is of the essence, so I want to get right to it. So, Coach, you got on staff at UCLA in the early 90s, and then 1995 was a magical year with Coach Herrick and young man named Tyus Edney. Coach has told me the story. I don't know if it's true about how you guys practice. Tyus going end-to-end. And then in the playoffs in March Madness, he did something extraordinary. And eventually, maybe you can talk about the night where you guys actually won a national championship.
You know, the beauty of that shot, it was 4.8 seconds
there
to go.
There you go.
And they scored. Missouri scored, and they just were playing a heck of a game. And when they scored, our guys put their heads down. And they're walking off the floor. We call timeout. And, you know, me as an assistant, I'm running the coach. I said, we got to run our home run play. We got to run. And I'll never forget, he says, shut up. I know what I'm doing. He said it just like that. And I was fired up that he said that because, like, okay, we got a plan. This is – and he started walking out on the court. And he tells Tyus, you're going to shoot the ball. Now, in NCAA tournament, there's two-minute timeouts. So for 2 minutes, Tyus sat there knowing he was going to shoot the ball. When Coach Herrick drew up the situation, the play for Tyus to get in the one-on-one coverage, he told Tyus, don't pass the ball. Because he knew if he wavered at all, he might run out of time. And I always say the guy's name was Derek Grimm. He was 6'8", the Missouri player. If he would not have clipped his fingernails, he would have got a piece of that shot. Yep. And Tyus makes the shot. But the genius with Coach was telling Tyus, give him the confidence to think about it and know you're the guy, you're going to shoot the ball. He went on to make that shot, and it was an experience that I wish everybody could live it. You know, to win a national championship, and it's so surreal. Like, this is really us. When you walk out on the court before the game, you're looking around, and Billy Packer's out, and Lynn Nance, Jim Nance, they're all out there, and you're like, we're really playing in this game. This is us. And to be champions and everything that comes with it, it literally changed just about everyone's life at that point.
Lorenzo Romar is my guest. So I want to get to more recent times and a couple questions that are on my heart. So you, in a sense, go back home to Pepperdine as the head coach. How long have you been there? And obviously we just had a year with the pandemic and changed a few things.
After being at UCLA for a few years, Pepperdine was the first head job that I had 20 years ago. I was there for 3 years, went to St. Louis for 3 years, and then was at my alma mater, Washington, for 15. And then I was fired. And 2017, I was an assistant at Arizona for a year, and then Pepperdine came calling again. And I took the job and have been extremely excited about being back at Pepperdine.
And the past year, obviously, season didn't go as planned. Anything you think is noteworthy to talk about that season? And as we get through this summer, what's life now on the campus of the Waves and what's going on with your team? And obviously, we want to talk about the Lord and really breathing into young man what it means to be a man.
Well, I'll go quickly with it was very interesting year because you talk about kids having to go into quarantine potentially for 10 to 14 days. That means they can't leave their room. That means that, except for exercise, that means that meals have to be brought to their doorstep. And I just can't imagine at 19, 20 years old being in a situation like that during basketball season. It was really tough. You're concerned about your guys. You know, okay, we may not be able to play a game. We may not be a practice, but you're going crazy in your room. You know, so it was really tough to navigate through the year, but we were able to make it through the year, and then we were able to finish, and it wasn't the NCAA or the NIT championship, but we were able to win the CBI championship, which is the College Basketball Invitational. And it just, when we first took the job, you know, things weren't going very well, and even though it wasn't a big-time championship, guys started to gain confidence and feel like we learned how to win, so that's a big – we took a big step, I thought, this year in spite of everything that happened in the pandemic from a basketball perspective.
From a perspective of being a follower of Christ and being in the position God has you now as being the head coach and, in a way, being a role model for many young men, if it does, how does your faith come into play as you coach now?
I think it helps a lot with trust. Because if you're living the way Christ would want you to live, the way our manual, the Bible, tells us to live, then you're going to treat people with respect. Treating someone with respect and love doesn't mean you're not going to discipline them. It doesn't mean that someone will get snatched out of the game because they're not doing what they're supposed to do. That doesn't mean I'm not loving them or respecting them. But I think kids, they sense that you really care. And whatever success I've had as a basketball coach, it's been based off biblical principles. Treating people the way you'd want to be treated, being honest, the integrity thing there. You know, you mentioned Coach Herrick. He'd always say, you can't con a con and you can't kid a kid. He'd always say that, you know, and it's true. They see right through you if there's any phoniness with you. And I think that has helped. And more is, you heard it before, more is caught than taught. So every day it's a challenge for me to go out and try to live a Christ-like life in front of these guys so that he can be attractive for them. And I've learned, even when I make mistakes and when I'm not perfect in front of them, for me to be able to say I made a mistake, I blew it, is even greater sometimes, because they see, you know what, we're the same. He makes mistakes just like me. But he loves this God, and, you know, it's it's been something that's just been inspirational for me. And like I said, it's a challenge every day.
Coach Lorenzo Romar is my guest. We've got about three and a half minutes. In truth, I've been here 8 years, and I've not really made many relationships at Pepperdine, APU, Biola. I know the president's, Paul Ferguson, is leaving APU now. And Pepperdine, I've had a few connections out there. Talk about this incredible campus in Malibu. Obviously, if a young man plays ball there, he's going to hear a little bit about the Lord. It's not like it's just some public university. And yet we're in some very interesting times where things are kind of changing rapidly.
Very much so. And our president, Jim Gash, is a phenomenal man of God. And God is first in his life, and he tries to run a university that way. And it is a Christian school, and it's a school that I'm proud to be a part of. I'm proud to go to work there and know that I work for Pepperdine University and what it stands for. And you talk about recruiting, we'll never lose a recruit because the campus isn't nice looking.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
Beautiful campus, but there are beautiful people that are there. And a lot of times you hear people just talk about the caring that goes on at the school.
We have 2 minutes, and I have many more questions, but I just want to give you the microphone. You drove through traffic. I invited you. You were gracious enough to accept come in studio. What, if anything, does the Lord have on your heart that you want to share with the listeners? And it may be something from God. It may just be something you want to share. I don't know.
I wanted to, when you asked me to come on the show, I know you are. You listen to your show, and I felt it was an honor. But anytime I can be involved anywhere where it's going to bring God glory or promote the name of the Lord, I'm there. Count me in. And this is just another opportunity. And I look at my life and I tell people all the time, God's always training you for something that he wants, a way that he wants to use you. I don't care what you're doing, what you're going through. God is in control and he's training you to get you to another place where he wants you to be.
Amen. Lorenzo Romar has been my guest. Maybe our listeners now will follow the waves come fall.
All right.
I know I'll be out there. God, with his blessing, that things will be open and we can kind of get back to things a little bit. One of my best friends, Kevin Malone, lived on campus for a while. I went over there, and another friend of mine played at UCLA baseball. So I've been to Pepperdine's campus a number of times, let alone Coach Herrick, spending time there as well. But my brother, I love you. I'm excited about what God has in the season of your life, and I'm excited that he's kind of put his shoulder to shoulder, and maybe he's got something for us to do as well. But for now, I just really appreciate you, and I thank you for coming on the program and doing all you do for his kingdom.
Thank you so much. Likewise, and thanks so much for having me.
All right, you got it.
All right.
Coach Lorenzo Romar, Pepperdine University. More of the Frank Sontag Show next.